Well, we've seen reports over some time that the needs for humanitarian support have been increasing. I think it seems to be clear that the main reason is that the food production has not gone up for several reasons. One of them being that people have not yet been able to go back to their farms and start producing food again. Although I would say that the peace that has the cessation of hostilities, the reduction of political violence, and the cooperation between the various armed factions have improved humanitarian access. So food is getting out there, but unfortunately there's still an increasing number of people in South Sudan that seems to need that kind of support. We hope that if the peace agreement holds, that trend will turn so that less people will need humanitarian support.
The report puts that 7 million people in the country will face the food crisis. And I would like to say, how think 7 million people are going to cope, and what do you think should be done?
I think you need to go into those numbers more closely. I can't vouch for that number exactly myself, not being an expert on humanitarian affairs. But what I will say is that there is a food insecurity for a large number. Actually, a majority of the population has food insecurity. They don't know if they will have enough food. They will be, some of them might be even on the verge of hunger and starvation. So that's a terrible situation. Fortunately for South Sudan, there is already a large international effort here to provide humanitarian support, and it's possible, of course, to increase that effort to meet these demands, and I think that also will happen. But it depends on donors like us making available for the funds necessary to provide the support. I strongly believe that the humanitarian efforts need also to address the specific situation of South Sudan. It's a long-term crisis. It's not enough to just hand out bags of food or rice or sorghum. You really need to look at ways that can improve food security long-term in the country, which means that you need to make a lot of efforts in resilience and improve the people's livelihoods and their own possibility of producing food. So Norway is a strong supporter of Istanbul Declaration to close the gap between humanitarian aid and development. Type of aid which is more cash based, stimulating the economy, stimulating food production is incredibly important in all of this, because short term solutions by handouts of food can actually ruin local markets. It can can be pretty destructive for the country's own food production. So it has to be done in the right way. But we do fortunately see that increasingly these ideas are implemented also on the ground.
Now, you spoke about issue of security and people are not farming enough for them to produce food because of the situation in the country. In the light of the revitalized peace agreement, I would like to see, as an ambassador, how do you see that the implementation of the peace agreement will be able to improve the situation so that people can be able to go back to their areas and start cultivating.
Well, I think first of all, it's good to see that we have a better political situation in the country. There's very much less political violence than was the case before. The parties are talking to each other. There's a political dialogue about the challenges and problems of implementing the peace agreement. So that's all very positive. I think they really need to work on security sector reform to make everybody feel safe in this country. The South Sudanese need to see that the army, the police, the security services, they are there for the entire nation. They're not there to protect a certain party. That's a very important aspect to this. So building a national army, national police, and national security services is key, I think, in this. When people start to believe that the security environment is much better, then they will return. And we've seen some of that already, but I don't think that we will have a really large number of people returning before there is they feel safe enough and they have enough faith in the process that is going on. That this also, in addition to working on security sector reform, it's also necessary for the parties themselves, and I would say specifically for the two main proponents, President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, to meet regularly, show themselves together, because that's also sending out a signal that they both believe in this process.
Yes.
It has quite the opposite effect if they don't talk or are seen to talk.
Your observations on the, because now we have seen that the extension of the pre-transitional period for the formation of the government. As an ambassador, what is your observations? And the government is expected to be formed in November. And do you see that, are the parties moving enough, fast enough to reach this deadline?
No, not at all. They're moving very slowly, I would say. They're doing some good work, I think, in the committees. They have drafted plans. They have made some progress on common ideas and then what the end result should be. And that's very good. But there's way too little happening in terms of actually starting the difficult work of creating a national army and creating that sort of the security structures that will provide that security that and trust in security that I just talked about. So that work needs to speed up. I think it's also a political issue which doesn't really take resources in itself to solve. That's the issue of the number of states and the boundaries of states. That's a political issue that also needs to be solved. And that's the responsibility for that lies squarely with the parties to find a good solution that they all can live with and then move on. I mean, we're talking about a transitional phase. We're moving from a pre-transitional to a transitional phase. So what's happening now is the effort of stabilizing the country enough to move to elections in 2022. That's the purpose of this exercise. And if they're successful, I think the elections in 2022 will provide, first of all, legitimacy for you will have the first really elected government in South Sudan. That would be a momentous effort and success in itself. But that doesn't mean that all of the issues are over. I think the parties still need to move, continue to cooperate, and that you can't. This country cannot afford a situation where elections produce a winner that sort of takes everything. It has to be still a power sharing arrangement where people feel that they are represented in government, and the challenges are massive, but fortunately for South Sudan, it has a great people. It has actually resources that can be really put to good use for the development of the country, like its oil, like teak, like gold, minerals. But there are, they also have a massive international presence and the international community, which still wants to see South Sudan succeed and would support it in their efforts.
Norway is the member of the Troika. So how are you engaging the parties to be able to move faster and to reach some of these difficult reforms that are needed for the country to move forward?
Well, we are supporting it in politically, and I would also stress financially. We are first of all engaging directly with the parties. We're talking as a troika. We are talking to members of government, members of the opposition, civil society. We try to keep in touch with as many groups as possible. To basically try to get everybody on the same page and be constructive in furthering the peace agenda. We are, but we also see that the neighboring countries are incredibly important for securing a sustainable peace in this country. We've seen before that when the neighboring countries are not working together to support peace, it affects the conflict in South Sudan very negatively. So the IGAD countries, and specifically I think Sudan, Kenya, Ethiopia and Uganda, they need to be on board. They need to be the ones that are really pushing the parties forward. So we are also talking to them. We also supporting financially these institutions, IGAD. We are supporting the various mechanisms that have been established under the peace agreement, like CTSAM, like JMEC, and not to mention all of the development aid and humanitarian aid that our countries are providing to South Sudan, that both directly and indirectly is supporting the peace agreement. I, for Norway, for its part, we have been working hard now to complete two new agreements. One, which is a capacity-building program with the UNDP, which will deliver capacity to and basically provide the opportunity for the government and to get the type of people and the resources they need to run their government efficiently. And we believe that that's going to be a tremendously valuable program for the government. And we are also moving ahead with support to a stabilization fund, which will provide a number of activities on the ground for peace, reconciliation, and resilience. This fund is managed by UNDP on behalf of UNMISS, and Norway, Germany, and Sweden have gone in substantially in that fund. So these are all supporting activities to the implementation of the peace agreement. We also registered that and note that neighboring countries are offering logistical support or in-kind support to the process of the security sector reform. I think that's very, very valuable. It's really a joint international effort providing support to the implementation of the peace agreement. Most of all, though, at this point, I think the government needs to make good on its promise to fund the pre-transitional phase. They made it clear in May that they would provide an additional $100 million. I think it's really important that they put that money on the table now. It's not only very important to speed up the work which is being done, but it's also politically important because it sends out a signal that the government, the existing government, is behind the peace agreement, and that is important in itself.
Okay, it has been 2 years for you here in South Sudan. Mm. And how has it been?
It's been amazing in many ways. I for me, it's been a life-changing experience because I really experienced a part of the world which is new to me. And South Sudan was new to me when I started here as an ambassador. What has impressed me the most is the resilience and creativity of the South Sudanese people in basically surviving and keep going under very, very difficult circumstances. I also had the privilege of meeting many South Sudanese, especially I think the young people, young women, talented women, and talented youth that has a lot of ideas and a lot of energy that they want to put to good use to further the development of this country. And I think that's where sort of the real hope of South Sudan lies. Needs to put this face of conflicts behind them. The future of this country does not lie in its tribes. It lies in the unification of the country and the development of a clear South Sudanese identity. I think we see the beginning of that, and that's very very hopeful. So I'm very grateful that I have been able to serve here. I'm sure my successor, who's arriving in September, she will be interested and dedicated to promoting peace in South Sudan. That I feel that I have been